evacuation zone where Israel's military had urged Palestinian civilians to seek refuge as it focuses its military offensive in the north. IDF Lieutenant Colonel Gilad Pasternak says people are following orders to move south.
We've been here for a week. I haven't seen civilians. They all know the message, and all of them, most of them, went for the south. The IDF is doing all what he can in order to stop and to separate between the population and the militants of Hamas.
Elsewhere, Scotland's First Minister has confirmed his mother and father-in-law are back in the UK. Hunza Yousafz shared a picture of them with his extended family after they managed to escape the war in Gaza on Friday. An 18-hour hostage standoff at Hamburg Airport has come to an end peacefully. A man took a four-year-old girl, thought to be his daughter, captive in a car and drove it through a security barrier onto the airport tarmac. Detectives in Birmingham have launched a murder investigation after a man in his 20s was stabbed to death. He was found in Bordersley Green in the early hours. In sport, Aston Villa have been away at Nottingham Forest in the first of two Premier League games today. Live to Frank Watson at the City Ground.
It's just finished. Forest 2, Villa 0. Two long-range strikes for Forest. One early in the first half from Ola Aina. One early in the second from Oral Mangala. Too hot for Martinez to hold. Villa huffed and puffed, but only one clear chance. Ollie Watkins heading wide. Villa stay fifth. Forest up to 12th. It finished Forest 2, Villa 0.
A win for Liverpool, who kick off at Luton shortly, will take them second. And it's goalless heading into the second half between Hearts and Rangers in the semi-finals of the Scottish League Cup. That's the latest from Sky News. I'm Kat Suave.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM. This is Phoenix FM.
Proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
This evening it will become mainly fine overnight with clear periods, although the breeze should help to avoid a frost. One or two fleeting light showers may reach western areas, however most places should stay dry. Tomorrow it will be a similar day to today with mainly fine conditions with sunny spells, however the odd sharp shower may arrive later on the breeze. Maximum temperature tomorrow will be 12 degrees Celsius, and that is your weather.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
And welcome to the arts programme this week. It is the 5th of November. Gosh, we're in November already. What's happened?
No.
Well, we've got a firecracker show for you today, obviously. I think the whole theme of today has been a bit firecrackery, hasn't it? Noticed that on Vicky's show before. Thank you so much, Vicky and Tony, standing in there. That was a fantastic show. As you may have heard, you may have heard this, but it is, of course, fireworks night tonight, although apparently it's been fireworks night since Friday. I've noticed that there's been quite a lot of displays on since Friday.
Yes,
so depending on how you frame it, fireworks night or Guy Fawkes night, what better way to celebrate this weekend than a firecracker of a show packed full of the national headlines from arts and culture, a bit of international insight and local events.
And that is just one half of the show. We're also joined this weekend by our super talented friend Joel, aka Grim Dreamer, who has a special announcement. We'll be catching up with him about his journey into the music industry and listening to some of his fantastic tracks. So sit back and relax to this fiery autumn evening with me, Natalie.
And me, Claire Giveaux, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
Thank you. They wouldn't let me grieve for you, and it turned my heart black. There was no going back from that. But my faith grew stronger, and I found myself closer to God. I don't fear death anymore since I laid you to rest. Perhaps that is dangerous, but I long to lay by your side. Where I belong, my love, with you, my love. The faith I found has shown me the way. So take me, you won't break me. It's too late to save me. So take me to the cold. A day that goes by where I don't think of you. You make me stronger, and you've given me reason to be. I don't fear death anymore, its shackles released. Since I've made my peace, I am free. Free to lay by your side.
Wow.
So dramatic. And so on theme.
Very so, on theme. Yeah. Well done for finding that one.
Very good, Charlotte. So that was The Cold Hard Ground, performed by Hadley Fraser from the concert recording of Treason the Musical. So Treason shines a brand new light on the notorious gunpowder plot that saw the tension of a divided country end in an ambitious yet disastrous plot to bring down both the monarchy and the government. The Cold Hard Ground is sung from the point of view of Robert Catesby, the orchestrator of the gunpowder plot.
Yes. Not great. To be confused with the orchestra.
Not the orchestra. There wasn't an orchestra there when everything was being blown up. But there was an orchestrator, Robert Catesby, who greatly embraced Catholicism after the death of his wife in 1598. Treason the Musical will actually be performed in London from the 8th to the 18th of November at Alexandra Palace, and on the 21st and 22nd of November at the London Palladium. And I am actually going to see it with Charlotte.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was the other thing that we said last time we were together that we had to go and see, and I can't remember what it was? There was something that was coming.
It wasn't Six.
No, it was something that was...
Because I see one that I'm thinking.
It was something that was coming back, or coming...
Yeah,
we'll have to go back and look at our shows and think, well, what on earth were we talking about? Because it was definitely something that we were intending on booking. and I can't remember what
it was. Quite a specific musical, wasn't it, that we'd found was coming in January or something, wasn't it?
We need to go back and look at that. Anyway, it's nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you too, Claire.
It's been a while.
I've seen you for ages.
I know, we've been passing ships in the night of all of our international travel because we're international jet setters.
I know.
On the arts and culture programme. So yeah, last week, I did the whole Malta thing last week, because obviously I'd been to Malta, and then somebody that I knew that I worked with in Chelmsford and who has loads of experience in all sorts of culture and education world, but is now one of the ushers, front of house people at Chelmsford Theatre, Adrian Deeks. He was in Malta at the same time that I was, so I got him to come on the show and tell me a little bit about his experience of Malta.
But you didn't meet up while you were in Malta?
No, we didn't, because we only had one day crossing over. So we arrived late on the Thursday night, and then we had Friday, and then he went on the Friday night or Saturday, I think. So we didn't actually meet in Malta. We just met in the theatre.
Was it warm
afterwards
while you were there?
Yeah. It was boiling.
I'd quite like to be in Malta right now.
It was that, because it was what, two weekends ago? Not last weekend, not the weekend before that, the weekend, 3 weekends ago. Mm. And it was just when, in England, the weather just turned. Yeah. So it had been quite warm. And then we were coming back on the Sunday night and everyone was saying, it's like 12 degrees at Stansted and we'd just been in 30 degrees.
Saying that though, because I was in Czechia at the same time as you were in Malta, I think we were away at the same week, and it was quite warm there as well. So I think there was a little bit of a heat wave on the continent while in
a
bit old Blighty.
We didn't get it. No, we didn't get it. But yes, highly recommended Malta, lovely place. But what else have you been doing since I last saw you? You've been doing loads of things. So where were you
when you were supposed to be here on the radio? I was in Czechia. So I went to Prague, a small town outside of Prague called Kolín.
Kolín?
Kolín.
Kolín?
Like, it sounds like the man's name, Kolín.
Yeah.
But it's spelt with a K.
Okay.
Kolín.
Great.
And it's a medieval town with Gothic church.
Nice.
I learned a couple of things about the town while I was there, but I was mainly there for a conference on gender mainstreaming. So I went to...
What was that through? Was that with No Collective?
That was the European Commission.
Okay, and that was that with you with your No Collective hat on?
Yeah, that was a No Collective Fun Times activity. So I was there for a week with 20 other Europeans, kind of sharing good practice in youth work and society in general. So
nice.
I did a 2-hour workshop surrounding how to produce LGBTQIA+ projects. So a lot of the course was theoretical, so I came with my action hat on of how to practically do things. So I was there to help out with some of that, and actually just to learn how to improve what we're doing at the moment with the No Collective. I managed to get out for a couple of days as well, so went to another local place quite near Prague called Kutná Hora, which has the famous Bone Church as part of it, which is a church that has something like 30,000 bones inside that kind of decorate the church. Yeah. Interesting place. It's
that's a place. If you're interested in holy relics, that's a place to go to. Then,
and I can't even explain how you feel when you walk inside, because it's not a creepy place. You know, you wouldn't go there for Halloween. But there is something that kind of makes you question kind of our legacy after we die. I mean, the bones in the church are people that had fought wars.
Okay.
And one war in particular that saw pretty much every man in the local town die, and the church just couldn't bury people quick enough. So by the time they got round to the bodies that were still left outside the church, they were just bones. So they decided that they would kind of create a monument inside the church instead. So there's something quite pleasant about the whole thing, but also quite dark at the same time. Yeah, very interesting. And Kutná Hora also has an amazing cathedral that was built over, I think it was like 200 years before they finished this cathedral, that was supposed to champion Kutná Hora as a place of like money and wealth.
Yeah.
And they were trying to beat the one in Prague, which is also nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my trip. I also went to see the Muha exhibition in their town hall, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very bohemian.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a nice weekend then. So, but a bit work,
it was,
but
it was
also
a full
some
10
nicer.
Days.
Well, yes, actually, that was long. It was a weekend for me that you were away. And since you've been back, talking about LGBTQ, you've had the most successful weekend in cinema, haven't you?
Yeah, so yesterday we ran the first East London LGBTQ plus film festival. It was a selection of independent films from across the world that we played alongside a film called Trouser Bar by producer David McGillifrey, who is the author of many books, but notably is a writer for Julian Clary.
Oh, right,
so he's
okay.
A very funny man. But he came to show his film Trouser Bar, which was about Laurence Olivier and kind of the scandal behind his sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So we played that, and then there was a bar, and Joe, who has been on the show, co-founder of the No Collective, he came down to run a bar with his husband Jack. And that was also very successful. They're very good at making cocktails, much better than me. Yeah, it was just a really lovely day. And so many people came. Somebody travelled all the way from Canada to come and see their film in the festival.
Wow, that's really cool.
And he came with his partner and met up with family in the UK. And they crowdfunded because they just really wanted to see their film in London.
Oh,
and yeah, it was so great because, you know, we've run a lot of film festivals and the first one is always difficult and you don't know what to expect. And generally the turnout isn't usually that great.
Yeah.
But this has kind of been a real exception to that.
Really interesting. Will you, apart from the people obviously within the films themselves, the audiences, will you be able to tell how far audiences have come for that? Will you be able to get a bit more of kind of the audience data out of it to understand how, you know, what's the community in Havering coming to this, or is this much further afield?
Yeah, I mean, I've got all of my postcodes from the registration documents that we've made, so yeah,
that's
we will
really
be able
exciting.
To do some data around that.
Nice.
Yeah. A big shout out to Carrie as well.
Yes,
she's obviously been on the show, and she's been on Drive Time on Phoenix FM. She's kind of been really pushing it out there. So yeah, congratulations.
Oh,
to Carrie,
well done, Carrie. That's really
the
cool.
Festival.
Anything else?
Anything else?
Did you do any fireworks displays?
No, but you know what? I had a really bad cold this week, and I went to see Fall Out Boy in concert, and they had fireworks on stage, and it totally messed up my head. They were too loud. Never go to a concert with a head cold.
Oh.
I mean, I'm sure
and
they were amazing,
fireworks.
But my ears popped, and then they had fireworks on stage, and I couldn't hear a thing. But Fall Out Boy were amazing as well. So,
cool. Well, we've
very
got
busy week.
Very busy week. Well, let's get on with it. So this week I wasn't so madly busy this week. There was quite a lot. It was quite a heavy work week this week. But I did get to go to two things yesterday. So I went across to, first I went to the Essex Food and Drink Fair here, actually. And I went with my friend Becky.
Did you taste anything delicious?
We did taste. Oh, I did. I tasted some very, very, very.
Have you got an hour?
I tasted some very, very, very delicious rum, which had to come home with me.
Oh no! And
it wasn't just about alcohol, but there was quite a lot of alcohol there. I had this tiny little sample, and I smelt it, and I thought that really smells of bananas. It's absolutely delicious. And I smelt it and thought this is going to be nice because I love bananas.
Yeah.
Drank it and I was like, oh, it tastes of bananas. It's got this like really soft undercurrent of bananas in it, but you can really smell it, and it was just absolutely delicious.
And that was a rum,
and that was
a golden rum.
Yeah, dark rum. So that came home
later.
That came home with me to give the kids to wrap up for me for Christmas. Obviously, this is what Mummy's going to be doing at Christmas, darlings. Sitting on the sofa and drinking this bottle of rum. It was nice. It was really good. I went with my friend Becky, who is Mrs. Christmas, and you need to go to a Christmas fair with people who love Christmas. I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
And it was rammed. It was absolutely rammed. So for all that people are saying that, you know, don't buy, people aren't buying so much, or that the kind of, you know, the bits and pieces around Christmas which aren't necessities, well, they were buying them over the weekend at that festival. So, you know, there's definitely an appetite for people to want to feel jolly and to feel happy and to feel merry and all of those things that kind of Christmas
brings. I imagine people have been saving money for Christmas as well.
I think so. And, you know, I just think, you know, it's partly about making... It's just making life feel a bit better, isn't it? It's having something to look forward to. It's really important at the moment.
Yeah.
So that was really great. And then I popped in to see Lauren, and she very kindly got me a seat to watch sometime soon.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
Oh, and it was just lovely. It was so lovely. And I can definitely tell you, there was a group of my other friends that were there as well, and they were all in tears. They knew one of the lead actors in it, and it was just like, it was about 40 women on stage at one point. You know, it was quite a big cast. And it was just glorious. And so this, if you remember from the interview that Lauren and her colleague from the show came and talked to us about, and it was, there were lots of different women's stories that were kind of brought together in this one narrative of these two friendships, these two young girls who'd grown up together pre-war. So they'd grown up in the sort of 20s, 30s. And then after the war, they were both planning on going to America, but actually they ended up not both going, and one of them went and the other one stayed behind. And it was just the kind of, it was just the sort of poignancy of female friendship over decades and over continents. And it was just beautiful. And they did it from the perspective of starting from now and working backwards in time, which was really nice. And so they kind of, you know, they sort of
in this kind of story narration.
Yeah. And they used the letters, they used the ideas of kind of, you know, pointing out key moments in their friendship history through the letters that they wrote each other, and started from a very sad place, because it started from one of the two friends had died, and it was the daughter getting in touch with the other daughter, and it was kind of told through memories and through letters and things like that.
Reading their mum's
just
letters.
Gorgeous. And there's glorious music from Andrew Linehan, who's the kind of musical genius at Queen's Theatre, and in his own right as well, and is a fantastic musician and does all sorts of, has his own band, and the music really pulled it all together as well. It was just beautiful. And Sometime Soon was this wonderful song that was a little repeat throughout the whole piece, that kind of just gave you that little tiny little segment of a piece of music with Sometime Soon that they just repeated every now and then and kind of just caught you again, and it tugged massively on your heartstrings. So yeah, when we went to the interval, like, all of my friends were like wiping tissues across their faces, and I was like, oh, I said to you, I mean, I did have a little tear, but they were like people really seriously crying. It was amazing.
And you think, oh yeah, of course I'll take my box of tissues to the wedding or the funeral, but do I take it to local theatre?
Yeah, well, you need to. But do you know what? It's such a beautiful idea. And I think, you know, I emailed Lauren straight back and kind of told her how amazing it had been. But I also think that not only that performance has legs, but the idea has really strong links between, you know, that you could take that idea and tour it. So you could take the idea of finding lots of groups of women in different places to work with them about kind of stories of friendship and what those things mean, and then turn
and
that into something that's
about, in terms of that kind of gendered friendship as well between women for a long period of time. And those stories aren't really told so much, are they?
And it was very much like, the thing that you got was that even over decades, even with family changes, even with growing up and having children, even with all of those things, that falteringness of friendship that never left them, like they never questioned whether they were going to be friends or not. They just wrote to each other. Like, you know, this, the kind of the idea in the story was that they just persistently wrote to each other and kept in each other's lives. But then the want to be in each other's lives was so strong that a continent and wars and, you know, lack of money to be able to travel to see each other, nothing kind of stopped the friendship.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it just reminds you of when you've had friends like that, or you've kind of got friends like that, where you don't get to see them that often. It just kind of reminds you actually how important some of those friendships are. Yeah. It's not to say that male friendships aren't important either, but it was kind of really drawing on, you know, the kind of, some of the perhaps uniquenesses of female friendships, because you go through motherhood together, you go through those sorts of things together. But it was just lovely. It was really lovely. And there were some standout performances, actually. There was a neighbour who was this really acerbic kind of very brash character, and she was brilliant. She was very funny. So there's some really funny points in it as well. But it hung together really well and gave lots of, you know, lots of people a chance to do performance that, you know, perhaps they weren't kind of used to doing performances, but it gelled as an ensemble
piece.
So it's
a real mix of actors and just people with stories, wasn't it?
Yeah, It was lovely, really lovely. So well done, Lauren and team, and Andrew and everyone, because it was just glorious. And I really hope that they go and do something else with that piece. But I'm very excited this week.
You're very excited.
Yeah, so when you went here last week, I went on and on and on about Uncanny.
Oh, right, okay.
and talked a lot about ghost stories and Uncanny and all sorts of different things, and why is Uncanny important, and why has Danny Robbins become this kind of, you know, global superstar in the ghost world kind of thing. Did a lot of that last week when you weren't here, so you didn't have to hear it all again. But this week I'm going to Uncanny Live, so my my sensory experience of Uncanny has now progressed to in person. He will be there on the stage at Cambridge. I can't remember where I'm going now. I think it's Cambridge Junction or one of the spaces in Cambridge. But we're going up there this week to go and see it, and I'm very excited about that. But yeah. I have another one another podcast.
The Cambridge Corn Exchange.
Yes, it is. But there's another podcast that I am listening to at the moment called Ghost Story, and I absolutely love this one as well. So this is about. It's a true story, and it's written from the perspective of a journalist who has lived in this house as a child. And he, when he grows up, when he goes, as a child, he experiences ghostly apparitions in his bedroom. He experiences, and his sibling experiences something. And when they move out, they know that the family that move in after them also have some experiences. So he's kind of, you know, grown up with this sense that something was happening in the house he stayed in as a child. And when he got to, I think it was after he was at university, and it was his girlfriend that he met at university, and I think he talked about this kind of ghostly experience that he'd had, but he went back to his house, and he invited her home to where he had lived as a child for the first time. And when they got to his house, she kind of went, my grandfather used to, I think it was her grandfather or great-grandfather, used to live next door. And, you know, there's this tragedy that happened in my family. And he was like, no, what was that? And he said, well, my grandfather's wife, my grandmother, was murdered in her bed in this house next door to the one that you grew up in. And so he was trying to put this kind of connection of, oh, well, hang on a second. If there was this tragedy that happened next door, perhaps the ghostly figure that I saw was this, perhaps it was your grandmother, you know. He starts off on this journey of thinking this is a very mad coincidence, and how, and could this be my experience relate to the house next door and the shared walls and all those sorts of things. But it also delves into a much deeper undercurrent of what was going on in that family at the time. And there's like another researcher that has looked at it and said, the wife was murdered, but who was she murdered by? So she was accused of being murdered by her brother, who had gone to war and had come back with shrapnel in his head, and it had affected his mental health, and he'd lost his sight. And he was, I imagine he would have been diagnosed with schizophrenia or something like that. And he was a really troubled person, but he lived with them. And the claim was that he murdered her and then committed suicide, and the doctor and her husband was the one that kind of prevented, well, her husband found the wife and found him, and apparently the husband said that he was, the brother-in-law was trying to murder him as well. But it's all like one person testimony, so it's all riding on this one, on this grandfather, this doctor, this well-respected person in the community.
As well, that kind of testimony, you know, it's a clean case.
And the police absolutely were like, textbook.
This guy was mentally ill, of course. That
yes,
happened.
And she died in her bed, and he shot her, and the gun was in the bathroom, and it was locked door, and he died by suicide in the bathroom, and open and shut case. But more evidence or more kind of supposition has kind of been uncovered since then. So this is this, like, going back through the whole family and trying to, and going through this grandfather's life. So anyway, it's really, really fascinating. You can get it from your usual place where you get podcasts from, but it's from the Wondery app, if you look at them. But if you're wanting something to add to your uncanny experience like I was, then I can recommend that one. But let's get our first track in. This is First Aid Kit with, of course, some fireworks.
Welcome to award-winning care and luxurious living at Avery Collection at Brentwood Arches. We offer residential, nursing and dementia care delivered by highly trained and dedicated staff with spacious accommodation, light and airy apartments, expansive communal areas and gardens that allow residents to retain their independence in style. Join us for a look round and discover what life is like at Avery Collection at Brentwood Arches. Visit our website to find out more. Search for Avery Healthcare.
Is slow broadband cramping your style? Don't buffer in silence. Join BeFibre today and experience reliable, full fibre broadband. Enjoy a seamless, free installation and access to our UK-based customer service team. This is what streams are made of. This is broadband as it should be. This is BeFibre. Upgrade your world today at b-fibre.co.uk.
Are you looking for a reliable local travel agent to book your next holiday? At Not Just Travel Brentwood, we can book tour operators such as Jet2 Holidays, TUI, Hayes Travel and many more. We package any type of holiday together with full ATOL and APTA protection, giving you complete peace of mind. Visit our website, dinaandwarren.notjusttravel.com, and let us take away the stress of booking that dream getaway.
At The Mortgage Specialists, we offer whole-of-market mortgage advice. We pride ourselves on keeping things personal, ensuring the advice you receive is perfect for your situation. With over 25 years' experience, we offer our clients clear, independent advice, delivered in a professional way. Whether you're moving, looking to renew your mortgage, or maybe looking to invest in buy-to-let, call us now on Brentwood 222932 to speak with us today. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
Next to your fire.
That was Jimi Hendrix with Fire. I like that.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. Have you been to the Handel and Hendrix Museum?
No.
In London?
No.
Oh.
Not even heard of it.
Yes. It's just had a massive refurb and was reopened earlier on in the year. But I haven't been. So I might have to go on a little pilgrimage to go and have a look at that. Because I think they lived next door. They either lived next door to each other or they lived in the same place. And Hendrix lived there as in a squat. And Handel lived there originally. So we've got this kind of really odd Handel and Hendrix museum.
I always forget about London museums, though. London is just so jam-packed full of museums, and I just never go into London. I'm always going somewhere else to go to the museums. So,
yeah.
Kind of need to do a couple of days of, like, holiday in the city or something.
Oh, yes. Well, if we ever get any time off, that would be nice, wouldn't it? So let's have a bit of some national news then, because there's been quite a lot been going on in the last few weeks. But interestingly, though, there's a lot of talk about AI. We've covered this a lot on the programme, and I think we should probably get somebody to come in and really talk to us about AI. There's a big talk that the GLA are putting together at the moment on AI and the creative industries and what it means. I think it's sometime in a couple of weeks' time. I've registered for that one, and we can share the link for that. But if you're interested in what AI means in the creative industries, you can probably find it on Eventbrite. But this is for government news. The government has announced measures and funding to put AI to work, improving every element of Britain's lives. So this is Britain to be made AI match fit with a 118 million skills package. This is kind of acknowledging that AI is here to stay, and it's progressing quickly. But the skills of most of us in understanding actually how we're going to use it, what does it mean to us on an everyday basis, is quite low. So it's investing in centres for postgraduate research, scholarships, a new visa scheme, and also a push for students to take on AI and data courses to ensure that the UK has the skilled workforce to harness this potential. From new technology to screen for lung cancer to tools that will cut workloads for teachers, AI will transform efficiency and productivity right across society. It's another industrial revolution moment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's funny. The thing. I was literally talking to Charlotte about this the other day, because she wrote her master's dissertation on AI and the ethics of aesthetics and AI. Mm-hmm. And I was saying it is a lot like the industrial revolution. There's going to be a lot of backlash against AI, but as long as it's used in the right way,
yes,
it should be good for everyone. But it's that right way that needs to be right. And we're talking about how important the ethics behind the introduction of AI is, and having policy in place for that as well. But to be honest, the funding is a beneficial thing, I think, in terms of making sure things are done correctly.
Absolutely.
And some kind of governmental standard as well, instead of just big companies coming and kind of forcing through AI.
We've had two kind of our industrial revolutions of this century are definitely around data and AI, aren't they? That kind of really thinking about what are the right choices, what are those ethical choices and approaches and processes that we need to put in place. But also there's a lot of fear around AI, because obviously there's a lot of kind of fear around what it might do and what it might take over.
I think there's a lot of optimism that it can be great for utility, but the fear comes from the fear that it will take over the things that we enjoy doing. And I think when it comes to arts, especially visual arts, that actually taking away somebody's right of expression for productivity, why would you do that? That's a joy in life. Why would you want to take that away?
Exactly. And what we know it can't do is listen to what a client wants, understands it, produces something, adapts it, listens to the client again, and then produce. So in terms of the design world, I know there's quite a lot of designers and people working in cultural marketing and those kind of fields who are using AI, but who are also acknowledging that you can't brief AI to think about the nuances of what
it's
somebody needs.
The difference between being a curator and a creator, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what I did find interesting about that, though, is a lot of that, the £117 million that they were investing in innovation and research, actually they're looking for small grassroots companies in the UK to take on some of those research projects, which means actually there is this first of finding very, very new things that other countries aren't doing. Yeah. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And wider news around donors. So there's a study that's just been done by the Tessitura Network, a research study about donor revenue for the cultural sector. And it said it's been falling this year, and it's fallen by a quarter this year. So greater numbers of individuals are actually supporting cultural organisations. So you've got this really interesting situation where you've got more people supporting, but at a lower level. Yeah. So more people are supporting cultural organisations than at any time since 2018, but the overall cost, the overall revenue, the overall income from that has dropped 25% last year. And there's all sorts of reasons why this might be, and there's all sorts of reasons why more donors are coming in to support as well, because obviously some of the big organisations, and I have to say that this study was done with data from very large organisations, so I don't think this really gives a very clear picture. So it's talking about things like places like the Royal Opera House, Royal Shakespeare Company, South Bank Centre, Welsh National Opera.
Yeah.
and the level of kind of individual donors that they get. So it's not hugely representative of the whole sector.
I wondered, would that include crowdfunding?
I don't think so. I think this is probably around individual giving.
Yeah, so kind of these gift donations that you give when you give a pound when you've bought your ticket and those types of things, maybe.
Or individual donors who are listed as, you know, the people who put their names on museums and, you know, different rooms in wings in museums and stuff, and or who sponsor a whole programme in a theatre or whatever. Okay. It's those kind of individual donors as well. So it has been... There's been a significant drop in the level of income, but the total number of people donating has risen to its highest level. So, you know, what they don't really tell you is, I suppose, what that looks like beyond those big four or five organisations. But one of the drivers from this is clearly the Arts Council's reduction of investment, particularly in some. I mean, that, you know, a lot of those organisations are based in London, so they are worried themselves anyway. But I don't think that paints a massively difficult picture for donor giving. I think the fact that there are more donors is really interesting. So I'd be more interested to hear.
It just opens a conversation of who's responsible for the funding of arts and culture, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's a new body that's been set up to tackle cancel culture in the arts. This is called Freedom in the Arts, and it's been co-founded by former Arts Council employee Denise Farmy, who says that the organisation wants to tackle the culture of fear and intimidation facing artists. This is a new organisation claiming people in the arts sector are being cancelled for expressing their views on gender and diversity, and it's launched in a bid to encourage free thought and expression. It's been set up by Rosie Kay, who was the artistic director and CEO of dance company K2 Co, and Denise Fye, who was the former relationship manager at the Arts Council of England, who won the employment tribunal recently against the organisation after she was found to have been harassed by fellow staff for her gender critical beliefs. And the two have said that the new organisation is a 5-year emergency project to tackle the culture of fear and intimidation facing artists. And apparently when setting up the organisation, they did speak to lots of artists who were kind of scared of saying anything or saying the wrong thing, and also kind of, you know, if they did say something inappropriate or wrong in certain circles, then they were you know, not used for any more commissions. They were kind of it was the cancel culture thing. So I suppose the kind of aim behind it is to champion both artistic freedom of expression but also of voice,
and I guess the idea that people need to be educated before they know everything. Which is,
so that's been set up. There's also a new crisis grant scheme for theatre workers. So if you know anyone struggling at the moment with the cost of living who works in the theatre industry, you can now apply for support from a crisis grant scheme launched by the Royal Theatrical Fund. The charity has said that the one-off grant will be available for people who have worked in theatre for at least 7 years who can't meet their essential needs due to an unforeseen change in circumstances. It's a new scheme that was launched this week and is for individuals who are not affected by illness or injury, because that's another fund that they also offer. So this is much more about people whose cost of living.
It's about everyday income.
It's about everyday costs. And if you want to find out more, it's www.trtf.com and look up the crisis grants for people who have worked in the theatre industry for at least 7 years. But I think that's theatre across the board. So it's kind of front of house, back of house, everything.
Yep.
There's been a call for global city leaders to include culture as a dedicated UN sustainable development goal. So this is civic leaders from across 40 cities and 6 continents came together in São Paulo last week for the World Cities Culture Summit, which was hosted for the first time in Latin America. And I think the deputy mayor for London was there, as I seem to remember somebody telling me this week that Justine Simons was over there. The annual event brings together mayors and deputy mayors from member cities across the globe in each host city every year, where they share best ideas and solutions for placing culture at the heart of city planning and investment. This year also saw the launch of the São Paulo Manifesto, a goal for culture, with lots of those countries signing up to it. And the manifesto calls for culture to be dedicated to be a dedicated UN Sustainable Development Goal post 2030 to recognise its essential role in shaping and building a successful, sustainable future for the world. I mean, I think this is a really good thing that it's kind of being considered at that level of being one of the significant goals.
It's kind of surprising, actually,
that it hasn't already. Yeah, I agree. And then finally, in 2025, we are getting ready for the Olympics of Design. The Design Council is going to host the 34th World Design Congress in London. This is a prestigious three-day event which takes place every 2 years, gathering together in the international design community and thought leaders from a business, research, education to discuss and debate design issues of global importance. London was selected against stiff competition as home to some of the world's best design and designers. And previous cities have included places like Tokyo, Mexico City, Cape Town and Seoul. The main event will be run in the capital in conjunction with the annual London Design Festival, supported by regional moments to really put the UK at the heart of global design community. We will be looking out for those regional moments, for sure. The theme for 2025 is Design for Planet. The effects of climate change are more evident than ever, and design has a crucial role to play to help reduce carbon emissions and increase biodiversity. So look out for that one in 2025. This has got to be the winning entry for today's brilliantly named band.
Okay.
This is Psychedelic Porn Crumpets.
Phoenix FM.
Once upon a time,
Cinderella,
the most magical fairy tale of them all.
You will never go to the ball.
A girl who dares to dream.
On the stroke of midnight, the spell will be broken, and everything will be as it was before.
Goodbye, my prince.
Wait, I don't even know your name.
We're back at the Towngate Theatre, Basildon, with Cinderella. There's magic, flying horses, and dreams that really do come true. From November to the 2nd of January. Book now at towngatetheatre.co.uk.
Do you or someone you know have a drug problem?
Talk to someone that has been there.
Narcotics Anonymous is a group of recovering addicts that has found a new way to live without the use of drugs.
For a confidential chat or to find your local meeting, call 0300 999 1212 or visit our website ukna.org.
Take the first step to recovery.
With the colder weather almost here, it's time to make those all-important home improvements to keep you warm and secure through the winter. Upgrading your windows and doors with SEH VAC will not only help improve the energy performance of your home and save you money on your heating bills, but will also keep you safe with the latest security features. Plus, get up to 35% off windows, doors, conservatories and extensions. Visit SEHVAC.com to find your nearest showroom and see our new product ranges. Terms and conditions apply.
Could you give the precious gift of time? Our St. Francis Hospice charity shops urgently need more volunteers. By volunteering at our shops, you'll be helping us to make a real difference to local people that need our experienced care. You'll also gain new skills and make new friends along the way. Apply to volunteer in our shops today. Go to sfh.org.uk/volunteer.
As I